Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. I got a special guest on the line with me today. I am talking with Steve Laughlin in Indianapolis. Steve, how's it going today, buddy? Good. I got Steve on the line. Steve, actually, I came across Steve kind of an interesting thing. Steve's actually a road cycling coach who has some pretty unique perspective on training for road riding. And I'll let him tell the story, but through a roundabout way, he got into some skills training with Gene Hamilton, which led him to my site, which led him to reading my clipless pedals versus flat pedals debate. And he's actually the guy that forwarded me the studies that I had referred to on my blog about pedal stroke and cycling efficiency and some of these things that science is telling us about. So I wanted to get Steve on the line to get some perspective from a road cycling coach about what we're actually learning what we know now about a good pedal stroke and what it consists of. So Steve, thanks for taking the time to join us today. Really excited to share this information with everybody. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your background and kind of what your expertise is in, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, James. Well, essentially my background is I'm an expert level USA cycling coach. And one level away from level one certification. I've got a couple years left to wait on that, but plan on getting out to Colorado Springs to complete that. One of the few coaches in the U.S. that's both at the expert level and has gone ahead and done the power certification course and passed that through USA Cycling. My background is kind of a little bit diverse. Started off as a kid being a baseball pitcher, and through a lot of injuries, my orthopedic physician decided it might be a good idea to take something else up. And he said, "Why don't you get on a bike?" So I started doing it and got a kick out of it. And the more I started doing it, it was like, this is pretty good stuff. And then I started wondering, well, what else is there? And how do you, start to learn more about how to cycle and how to get it right? And so through that, I went through the certification program through USA Cycling, also a certified spin instructor through Johnny G or Mad Dog Athletics, and I'm at a star level 3, which is one level from the top of that. And so it's mainly just a major interest in cycling at all levels, whether it be on trainers, out on the road. And then you mentioned the Gene Hamilton camp. It was kind of as a whim thing. I'm thinking, well, this bike skills stuff sounds pretty cool, so I think I want to check this out. And even though I wasn't much of a mountain biker and that type of thing, I've learned a tremendous amount from going to Gene's camp, and I'd highly recommend that to anybody. And so through that, I ran into you, James, and started reading your blog and some of the information, and then bought into the MTB Combos program, and was really fascinated with what you're doing and how you're doing it and how applicable it honestly is to everything that a road cyclist does, and even some of the comments that you've made around the top three clipless pedal myths, and then standing climbing, and why pedals are simply a crutch, was fascinating to me. And it wasn't long after that I was looking at that, and I was online. USA Cycling has continuing education, and one of the continuing education presentations was done from Dr. Andrew Coggan, and for those of you who may not know much about Andy, he's pretty much written the Bible on power training with Hunter Allen. And power training and road cycling is a huge thing because it's really a way to quantitatively dial somebody in and then put them in a very specific program to get results. And Andy had put this presentation together for the coaches on a webinar, and the presentation was geared around cycling efficiency. What does it really mean? There was a lot of things around metabolic parts, but I think the main part that your clientele and customers would be interested in was around pedaling efficiency, and what does that really mean? The metabolic part's one part of it, but it's more around differentiation between pedaling efficiency and those types of things.
Yeah, that's that's one of the big responses that I get from mountain bikers and riders in general when I talk about flats versus clipless pedals, their first response is, well, how do you pedal with as much power? Or how do you spin circles? Like, how do you have a good pedal stroke if you're not attached to the pedal? And so, you know, some of the data and some of the research that was in that presentation was really fascinating, because it really broke down and took a look at, you know, these different kinds of pedal strokes and which one actually was the most powerful and the most efficient. And the answers were kind of surprising, especially considering what most people are led to believe, you know, constitutes a good strong pedal stroke. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the studies were finding and what we, you know, what we know about a good pedal stroke versus spinning circles and stuff.
Right. Well, and the neat part about what Andy had done was he basically had summarized in his presentation a bunch of different data points and presentations and research papers that have been written around this. And, you know, the classic, and most people have probably seen this that have been riding for a while, there's a classic clock diagram for pedaling forces. And so when you look at that clock diagram and you start at noon and you work all the way around the clock back up as you're coming through the pedal stroke, you know, the classic technique that is typically taught is, and honestly, I was extremely guilty of this because I used to teach it because I thought it was right, is that, hey, you want to have a really round pedal stroke, equal pressure, equal force, all the way through that pedal stroke. So at each turn of the crank, you essentially want to have a continuous push and drag and pull, you know, through that complete pedal stroke. And that's what is the traditional way that most people would teach. You teach that in spin class. I teach that to my clients out on the open road. It's like, you know, come on, we got to try to get equal pressure. But the reality of that is it's really anything but that. That's a myth. And so one of the myths that Andy was trying to debunk in there was, and he did it with sound research by drawing on, you know, articles and papers written by Morneau and Korf and various people in International Journal of Sports Medicine, the Medical Science and Sports Exercise Journal, was taking all of this research and then cueing it into something that added up into a better picture of what a good pedal stroke may look like and what it should look like. And essentially what you're going for is that you're really trying to take the force and smooth it out, and improving that action of the legs biomechanically and energetically is what you're going for. It stands to reason that if you look at a pedal stroke, if you go from, you know, 12 o'clock and then you go to 3 o'clock, what's happening there is that you're really engaging the hip extensor or the quads, and so the quads are a huge part of this. And then when you get from about 3 o'clock down to 6 o'clock, you're engaging the knee extensors. And then as you continue around that pedal stroke, what you get into is that as you drive through that, you're looking at, you know, the ankle plantar flexors once you get from about 5 to 6 o'clock. And then as you come around from about 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, you're looking at the ankle dorsiflexors. And so as you're looking at each one of these areas, what you're trying to do is look at how they're engaged, can they work in unison, and what makes sense here as you're driving through that. Well, honestly, it's that big quad that drives you through that power stroke. And so the misnomer is that you want to keep equal pressure all the way through that pedal stroke. And what Andy, through his research, was able to show and pulling upon the other research articles is that you actually become less efficient when you try to have a round pedal stroke. You're actually using more energy, and the efficiency gains are lessened by trying to have a perfect round pedal stroke. So, and to your point, James, and one of the things you talked about in your top three myths of clipless pedals was that you were debunking some of the things that Andy was talking about. So the reality for most cyclists is don't worry about trying trying to develop a round pedal stroke, you want to get the muscles to essentially work in unison and get them firing in such a way that you can maximize the efficiency through how they would normally biomechanically flow through a pedal stroke.
Right, yeah. So in other words, instead of trying to like get that perfectly round pedal stroke and I think that equal pressure thing, people probably, that's the same thing as like spinning circles, right? Like you want to be pushing and pulling and trying to like always be, trying to pull through the dead spot. Is that roughly the same thing that you're talking about, the keeping equal pressure?
Right. You pull up through that dead spot, and that's kind of where the debate on the clipless pedals comes in versus the flats too, because on a flat, how are you going to pull up? Well,
right.
You're not. And so with the clipless pedal, yeah, you can do that, but biomechanically, is it the right thing to do? And per some of the points you've made, it really just becomes a crutch.
Right.
And so the reality of that is that shouldn't be part of what you're shooting for here to, improve. I mean, one of the things that Andy showed in one of his slides is he has an effective pattern of force application on efficiency. So he's looking at gross efficiency on a percentage basis, and then he looks at, by that gross efficiency, which is a better way to go here. He looks at a preferred way that you would be preferred in pedaling. He looks at circular pattern. He looks at a pulling pattern and then a pushing pattern. Well, the closest of those three between circular, pulling, and pushing to preferred is actually pushing. And so you're looking at that big quad again. The quad's where you gain the advantage, and that's where you want to maximize the efficiency, because as you drive that quad through the pedal stroke and your opposite leg is coming on the backside up through that, it's that big quad that's going to drive you through there, not pulling up on the backstroke.
Right.
And literally, if you do have a perfect circular pedal stroke, I would submit to you that you've got some biomechanical issues, because in essence, the muscles that shouldn't be engaged as much are now being stressed way beyond probably the limits that they should be stressed upon, and that big quad muscle isn't firing the way it should be to take advantage of mechanically powering through the pedal stroke.
Right.
Really what you're looking at.
Yeah, this is, I think this is something I'm coming to realize more and more, is that when we assume that we need to somehow move or power movement differently just because we're sitting on a bike, like that's one of the biggest myths and lies and like actually impediments, I think, to people improving, their pedal stroke and their skills and things on the bike, because they feel like, okay, I'm sitting on this bike, and we're told from the minute that we get on a bike that, okay, now there's this special way to pedal, and there's this, and so it gets us thinking that like, okay, well, I instinctively just want to like push down hard on these pedals, but everybody's telling me that that's not the way to do it. But come to find out that is actually the way to do it. That the same way that you would run, where you're going to forcefully drive your leg into the ground and do a pretty much a neutral return of the free leg to get it ready to drive down again, is pretty much the same mechanics that you want to use when you're pedaling. Is that pretty much it?
No, that's spot on. That's a good summary of it. That's exactly spot on with what you're looking for as you're pedaling. And essentially, that's where great cyclists, that's the difference. One of the things that they offer on CompuTrainers is a spin scan. And so when you look at the spin scan, you're looking at the forces all the way through the pedal stroke. And so someone that has a really round spin scan, it used to be considered that, well, wow, that guy's got, perfect pedal stroke. Well, it's anything but that. You should be looking at something that's more oblong, and that's the guy that has the muscle memory right, that has the muscle recruitment right, that is really, working, and all the muscles are really working in harmony. And so that's what you should be shooting for versus this myth around this beautifully round pedal stroke.
Yeah. No, I think I mentioned in one of my last newsletters that at the Yeti Team Camp, one of their new national level downhill riders, he's been riding mountain bikes for a couple years, but he comes from a motocross background. But it was funny because he kept bugging me, saying that he wanted me to help him with his pedal stroke, that he doesn't know how to pedal a bike. And finally, we got out in the parking lot, and he's like, "Man, you need to help me out with this." And so I'm watching him, and I'm like, "Okay, well, pedal for me." And so he pedals, and I'm like, "Well, what? I mean, what's wrong?" He's like, "Well, am I supposed to be pulling up with this hand and pulling up with my back leg? I mean, what's the deal?" And I told him to sprint. I said, "Get off your bike, man. Give me your bike." And I was like, "Sprint." It must have been like, 10, 20 yards, something like that. And I said, "Sprint as fast as you can." And told him, "Come back and get on his bike." And then I said, "Okay, now do the exact same thing that you just did. Like, I want you to feel the exact same sensation on your bike that you felt when you were sprinting across this parking lot." And instantly, his pedaling power like doubled, and he was just zipping around the parking lot. And you just see the smile on his face, like, "Oh, wait a minute, I do know how to pedal a bike and do it right." And he was like so stoked on that. But yeah, I mean, just it just kind of like, more to your point that we're actually doing riders a great disservice, both from a performance standpoint and possibly from a longevity and injury prevention standpoint, continuing to preach this spin circles and pull up through the backstroke advice. And so I'm really glad that you're able to help kind of dispel some of these myths and shed some light on it for us.
Yeah, and Dr. Coggin is not just some Johnny come lately. I mean, he's been doing this for years and years and years, and just has an amazing ability to break things down. One of the things that he's looking at is power cranks. I don't know, James, if you're familiar with power cranks at all or not, but maybe you are or aren't. Have you had any experience with those at all?
Now, yeah, I haven't had any experience with any sort of power training equipment, personally, but I mean, it's definitely a tool that I like. And so, what's the deal with the power cranks?
Well, the interesting part about power cranks is these are crank arms that work independently. So you put these crank arms on your bike, and essentially each leg individually is used to pedal through the pedal stroke instead of, having them fixed and in place. And so there's literally no resistance on these as you pedal through those. But one of the interesting things is because there isn't any resistance, you're not even engaging your quads. To get around pedal stroke, what you're having to do is pull up on the backside and engage your hip flexors. So on a normal bike, a guy going 120 to 150 watts, which is a very light level of riding, if you tried to do the same 120 to 150 watts on the power cranks, your hip flexors would literally blow up in a few minutes. And it's essentially because you're using these inferior muscles on the pull-up to balance everything out. So the reality is that by blowing up these inferior muscles and putting this undue stress upon them, you just become less efficient, and you're not engaging the muscles to really harmonize and work in unison that you need to be for pedaling. So, power cranks are one of these things for triathletes and roadies. There's a lot of people that have bought into this, but, once again, Andy's taken a look at those and debunked the value of them. Now, for something like a runner, these things may have an extensive amount of value, or for other sports like downhill skiing, but for cycling, which what they were designed for, they literally don't serve any purpose because you're engaging the muscles in a way that's not normal.
Yeah, inefficient. It
doesn't follow a normal pattern.
Mess with Mother Nature at your own risk, I guess, is the
there you go,
is the take-home
message
there. Well, cool. Well, another thing, and actually I know we'd kind of talked about our questions a little bit beforehand, but I kind of wanted to I remember we'd had some discussions about your thoughts on how the fastest basically pedaling, like, the value of pedaling to cycling in general, and how a lot of riders just they want to just pedal their way to being a better rider, and they think that the better that they can pedal, the faster that they're going to be. And you actually have some pretty fascinating data from some of the riders that you train that shows that the fastest riders are usually those that pedal the least. And so, what have you found, and kind of what are your thoughts on this, and what you know, in the grand scheme of things, obviously pedaling is hugely important, but, you know, do you think that it gets a little overplayed in what it takes to be a great cyclist?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some similarities between mountain biking and road biking. And in particular, I think at Gene's camps, you learn a lot about cycling efficiency. It's like, how do you get through a corner? How do you learn to use your eyes? How do you learn how to balance your weight? How do you learn how to counter steer? Same things apply to a roadie. When you look at cycling efficiency, I could take accelerometers, in particular, you know, some of the new technology with accelerometers. Accelerometers have been around a long time, but literally you can look at someone and how they drive through a corner. And so are you, you know, like a train wreck going through a corner, or are you smooth? And are you consistent? And are you able to maintain the power coming in and out of the corner? Are you, you know, hitting the apex of the corner right? All those things play into road cycling. And so I can take a look at somebody's power file. And, for instance, I could look at two riders that finished the race pretty much equivalently, but one guy coming through a corner was going from 0 watts coasting and then had to blow up to 800 watts to get back in the mix because he was so inefficient on his bike, and he was pedaling his head off to get back in the game. Literally, well, I have another guy that was at 0 watts that may only have gone up to maybe 400 or 500 watts, that was smooth through the corner, managed the turn right, and saved all that energy. And then at the end of the race in the sprint, that guy had extra matches and was able to finish the race off and finish ahead of the other guy. And so efficiency on the bike is more than just, you know, pedaling. It's all the factors that you talk about in your programs, James. It's like core fitness. It's like, you know, learning skills, balance, those types of things. Same thing apply to roadies as they do to mountain bikers, and to a lesser extent triathletes. But once again, triathletes waste an awful lot of energy, and so if you're able to maximize your pedal stroke and use it when you need to, and then take advantage of drafting. Now, in mountain biking, drafting's not a big thing, but in a road race, drafting's huge. And so where do you maintain your position in the pack? Where's the most efficient place to be? All those kinds of things need to be determined. And literally, I can take a look at their power files, because we use technology called iBikes, where I have a cyclometer on there, and I can see how much time a guy spent out in the wind, how much time did he spend tucked in, was he doing what I wanted him to do at a particular point in the race, did he take off too soon? At the end, when they were doing a lead out, was the lead out too quick, or did we, you know, hit it just right? And so there's just all kinds of factors that wouldn't necessarily apply to a mountain biker, but where they do apply and where things are applicable to mountain biking is the efficiency aspect. And I think that's where the value of what you're doing, James, with the core fitness, the strength building, and also the aspect where Gene brings in the the cycling skill sets is huge. And in my sport, in road cycling and also the triathletes and some of the adventure racing, I've got some very fit athletes, but they sure as heck don't know how to handle their bike, and they don't understand how to pedal appropriately. So that's the next level.
Yeah.
That's the level that we're going to be shooting for here.
All right, man. Well, excellent. Well, that's really great info. I mean, I think that we've shared some really, really good stuff, you know, hopefully opened some people's eyes to some new ways of looking at, you know, pedaling their bike and also just kind of overall efficiency. I mean, if you've got a road cycling coach telling you that there is more to being a good road biker than just pedaling, then I would have to believe that me telling mountain bikers that there's more to being a good mountain biker than just pedaling has got to have some validity to it as well. But so anyway, Steve, before I let you go, I would love to give you the chance. You're out of Indianapolis, and obviously if anybody's listening to this, and you know, you're interested in checking out what Steve does, because obviously the guy is ahead of the times a little bit, I think, for road cycling. And so if somebody wanted to contact you and see about you helping them with a program or see what you got going on, you've actually got your own training program going on. I guess tell us a little bit about what you got going on and how people can find out more.
Yeah, we I have a partner, Bob Brooks, he's also USA Cycling coach, and he and I have been together now for a fourth season, and we have our own cycling academy where we offer a 16-week off-season program in Indianapolis, and lucky enough to have almost 50 participants in our class, and so our program, honestly, James, we've stolen a few things shamelessly from what you do with the core fitness piece. We do about a half an hour of core fitness and incorporate a few of the moves that you have within our class, and then we also do about an hour on the bike, working hard on cardio and you know, building that big engine to get ready for the race season. But our program is kind of small scale. We're looking to grow it. There's some opportunities to look at some regional things that we may get into, and hope to take more advantage with you as time goes on around your systems, and maybe look at a satellite type operation out of here.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. And feel free to steal anything you like of mine, because I'm just stealing it from other people on my end. So we'll just we'll continue the cycle.
Well, you've got it figured out on your end. One thing that we didn't mention that I want to kind of just draw back on real quickly is was one slide in Andy's presentation, which was called Pattern of Force Application in Elite Cyclists versus Non-Elite.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that Andy looked at, and I think we really should delve back into that real quickly, was he did a little bit of research and pulled this from Morneau, which was out of the International Journal of Sports Medicine, looking at a flat pedal versus a clipless pedal and the force through that pedal stroke. And literally, if you closed your eyes and you looked at the curve of through that pedal stroke, you could not tell the difference between a flat pedal and a clipless pedal on the effective force. And so, you know, for those out there that think that there's a significant power loss or anything like that, the reality is there just isn't. And
yeah.
I know that that's one of the arguments that you've had about this, and there's supporting evidence for that. So I just wanted to mention that real quick before we closed out here.
No, man, I really appreciate it. I've actually got the slide up looking at it right now, and to be totally honest with you, it's been a little while since I've looked at these slides, so I'd kind of forgotten that he'd actually looked at, you know, flat versus clipless pedaling strokes, and finding that in elite level and non-cyclist, that the pedal stroke, like I said, I'm looking at it right now, and the pedal stroke is basically exactly the same, you know, which again just means that a good pedal stroke on flat or clipless pedals can be recreated on flats, which means that the reality is that you're not really losing that much, if any, advantage from that interface and that thing there. And two, you know, just for the record, because I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, you know, I think one of the problems when we're talking like flats versus clipless is two things. One, like I'm personally not saying that flats are better than clipless. I'm just saying that they're not this terrible option compared to clipless pedals that most people make them out to be. So I think sometimes people hear me talk about this and think that I'm trying to say that flat pedals are better than clipless, and that's not necessarily the case. And the other thing is, you know, what are we talking about when we're talking about better? What is better? You know, from a pure performance standpoint, you know, I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to say that somebody could win the Tour de France on flat pedals. I'm not going to say that they couldn't, but I'm not ready to go so far as to say that. But you know, if we're talking about like longevity and durability, there's definitely some big questions that you can raise about whether wearing and using clipless pedals all of the time, especially considering that they don't offer this amazing advantage that they're billed to have, as to whether or not they're actually a good option for just your average trail rider on a daily basis. It's kind of like a track cyclist. You know, a track cyclist doesn't train in their racing shoes. You know, they have training shoes and then they have racing shoes. And I kind of think clipless pedals should be kind of viewed the same way with that. So I wanted to throw that out there, because I don't want to get you in trouble, Steve. I don't want anybody listening to this and taking this right way. Yeah, and thinking like, oh, that crazy guy's saying that flats are better for road cycling. That's not what we're saying. We're just trying to shed some light on the subject and trying to you know, let people know that there is a viable option, that flats are a good option, especially for mountain bikers where you have that technical skill element and you need to be able to ditch your bike if things get wrong and stuff like that. But never am I going to say that Lance Armstrong would have won all of his Tour de France's on flats. So anyways, just wanted to throw that out there, though. Well, cool, Steve. I appreciate you coming back to that. Was there anything else that you wanted to, any other points or anything like that you wanted to bring up before we closed out here?
No, not really. I think we covered a lot of ground here in a short time. I just think that, one of the beauties of what you do is that you're trying to help your clients make informed decisions. And I think, by giving them the data, by giving them the research, by, kind of breaking that down for them in layman's terms, that, I think that's good stuff. You want to give them, the opportunity to make informed decisions about what they decide to do. And I really think that what you're doing is of huge value to your customers.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I really appreciate it. I think that an educated consumer is my best customer. You know, I think if people know the truth, then it's easier to make smart decisions, and that's what I'm trying to do. So, and real quick, you do have a website. It's indycycling.com, right?
Yep.
So indycycling.com. So again, anybody in the Indianapolis area, especially if you ride road bikes, I highly, highly, highly recommend checking Steve out and seeing what he does. And I think he'd really be able to help you out. And hopefully Steve will have some stuff to help him expand out of that area, because I think he got a lot of good stuff to be able to help your fellow roadie. So appreciate you taking the time to join us, Steve. So I guess if that's it, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. Check me out on the web at bikejames.com. And Steve, appreciate you taking the time, and I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you in the next podcast.
Yep.